You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Delicious. delicious. Yes, I just love her laugh. That's Phyllis Diller. This is not. It's Michelle Anna Jordan here on Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. If I had done a show every single Sunday since the very first show on November 2nd, 1995, how many shows would that have been? Let's see, 520, so 1,040 minus 52, almost 1,000 shows. I have taken some Sundays off. This is our anniversary special. And I have, shaking his head at what I'm saying, I have here in the studio Mouthful's very first guest, Steve Garner of KSRO Radio. Steve, welcome to Mouthful.
This woman has to be 100 years old if she's not on the show.
It's great that you are here once again.
Thank you, old radio sister, for inviting me back.
You've been here almost every year?
I think almost. I wasn't here last year, though.
I don't remember last year.
You know why?
Why? Was I not here?
No, you were here. I was leaving on your show to go to Bali.
Oh, that's right. That's yeah. What, yeah, that was a really good reason.
And it was
I wouldn't be here tonight if I was going to Bali.
Yeah, Singapore and Hong Kong and Bali. It's
that's
the only,
right.
The only show I've missed since 1995.
And we also have joining us tonight, because sometimes it's just you and me. Sometimes it's we bring a third person in, and we brought the right third person in tonight. We have Zena Bauer of Woodenhead Winery. Wines, Woodenhead Wines.
Woodenhead Wine.
Yes. Thank you. I've wanted to have you on forever. And
thanks.
You said yes.
Yes. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Steve, when you first showed up, actually, let me frame that differently. What do you remember about the very first Mouthful?
That you were really scared.
Really?
Uh-huh. You asked me for advice, and how have I made it all these years on the radio, and any bits of pearls of wisdom that I can impart. And I think what I said was as true today as it was last decade, the decade before the last decade. Don't change a thing. Be exactly who you are off mic as you are on mic. Don't do anything except who you are. Make your writing come through, the voice that you have in your writing, and you'll be on for as long as you want to be on.
And I think I've done that. It took me a while. It takes a while. People, anyone who hears their voice for the first time through whatever medium it's been recorded, everyone feels a little weird. I think, oh, I sound like that. And it takes a while before you just can let that go. And it just no longer think about it. And you don't have to worry about this thing in front of your mouth. And you're just yourself. Mm-hmm. You can think exactly the same on air as you can off air. Mm-hmm. And I thank you very much because that was fabulous advice. But what else do you remember? Do you remember what you wore?
I think I wore something like Johnny Carson's Swami attire.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, a Queskin kind of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then one year you came in, I think it was...
I don't know what baby, I was on. I was on something.
Well, you came in I think it was baby blue leisure suit.
I did have my leisure suit. Yes, you were very good. Yeah, I had gotten a powder blue leisure suit.
Yes.
down in Haight Street Thrift Store, just in honor of your appearance.
Oh, seriously?
Here. Yeah, that's
right. Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was just left over from your usual Halloween.
No, I still have another leisure suit.
It's green, right?
I'm very unfortunate. It's a checked leisure suit.
But it's green checks.
It's green checks. And unfortunately, I may as well just confess, I can't fit in it anymore. But this is my leisure suit from 1972. That my mother bought for me, unknown to me, because I had to go to a wedding back in Kentucky.
And she bought you a leisure suit for the wedding.
And she knew that what I would show up with living in San Francisco would be inappropriate. So she took it on herself to buy me the appropriate suit, which was a green checked leisure suit. Mm-mm. And I may as well say I'm on a roll. She also bought my brother a black and white leisure suit. So we came to the wedding.
Kind of like twins.
In matching leisure suits.
Wow.
That's all I'll say.
And was this in Louisville, Kentucky?
This was in Louisville, yes. So.
Yes, okay. And it probably didn't look as weird there as it would here.
We blended right in. No one even... Really, when someone's wearing pink and chartreuse leisure suits, we didn't raise an eyebrow.
Yeah. No. Different world out there. But that's one of the reasons you have such an interesting palette. One of the things you've done in Sonoma County is really brought your memory and your passion for a lot of those Louisville foods. I mean, I didn't know what a hot brown was until you told me.
Well, it still has it's a wonderful place to go back to and visit. And the food, for better or worse, has really evolved. And because a lot of the West Coast and East Coast sensibilities have now, as you know, centered, it's almost indistinguishable from any other major city. But still, if you search it out, if you go outside Louisville a little bit, there's still a lot of traditional Southern-style restaurants where you can get the good, I call it the good old food.
The good old food. You've got great stories about the good old food. I think that we shouldn't fool around, though. I think we should open that bottle, and you should tell us what it is that you're going to be opening.
I brought a bottle of sparkling, our Naturel Method Champenoise, sparkling wine from Russian River Valley. And it's totally dry.
And what's the grape?
French Colombard.
That's what I thought. This will be the only French Colombard you'll probably ever taste.
I think so.
I have to say, you've had the still French Colombard, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's wonderful.
Is it not just one of the best wines with oysters in the world?
I agree.
And I apologize. I was trying to have oysters on the show tonight.
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I was promised oysters if I showed up today.
Okay, well, I'm having a problem with this little capsule here.
Well, we'll have to make up for no oysters tonight sometime soon.
Okay. All right.
I have two red bell peppers in my car, but that won't help.
Uh-oh. That was a nice sound. Oh, and you have good glasses.
I brought great glasses.
Are these Riedel?
Yes,
are these the Riedel vintage glasses?
These are Riedel. I'm not sure.
I think they're the vintage because the vintage are a little broader, and I've never gotten those. I had a whole set of Riedels, but my grandson Lucas, when he was about 18 months old, he discovered gravity through Riedel sparkling wine glasses. I caught him over in the cupboard, and he'd picked up a glass, and he held up a glass, and he dropped it and watched it go down, and it shattered. Dropped it, and it shattered, and he did another one. And you could see he wasn't being bad. He was discovering what we know as gravity, and I flew across the room and stopped him.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's an expensive science project.
Yes, but scooped him up so he wouldn't cut himself. And so I only have two more. I only have two Riedel glasses.
Shall we toast to Michelle Jordan's
continued success?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Let's see, we got to get a better sound there.
A better clink.
And Steve, you and I?
Yeah, over here.
There we go. And Mary, we raise our glass to you, and we know that you cannot partake because you're operating the board.
Cheers.
Oh.
Oh, that's good.
Every time I drink this wine, I just love it all over again. It's got that forward tartness that I really like. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Mm-hmm. How long have you made a sparkling Colombard?
This is the second time we've made it. It's a 2009 vintage. And Nick experimented and thought, make a sparkling with something different. So we made a still French Colombard, and Nick thought he'd try and make the Method Champenoise as well. So here it is.
That's wonderful.
It's really lovely. And where are you getting the grapes?
The grapes come from Russian River Valley, right on River Road, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's the West Cameron Ranch.
Uh-huh.
And we get our still wine from there, and the still grapes, and it's probably the last remaining vineyard around that mm-hmm. produces French Colombard in the area.
Now, is anyone else doing anything with the variety? I think you told me like somebody in Napa?
Yeah, there's somebody in Napa, and I forgot his name. I think it's a French name, but mm-hmm. he makes a still wine as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they, I mean, it's actually, French Colombard is the first wine I ever remember drinking. And it was in a little bar in Benicia. I was out on a date. And I never got drunk in high school. I just didn't, you know. I didn't have a taste for alcohol. And I was on a date with a policeman. Confession time here. He worked at Safeway part-time, and I thought he was cute, and I went out with him. And I don't know how I ended up with French Colombard, but I did. And it was not dry. Is that how it used to be made? Mm-hmm. Was it one of the sweet things?
Yeah. Jug wine? Yeah, it's sweet jug wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No right. taste for it.
No.
Didn't drink much.
I can see the Almaden French Colombard mm-hmm,
right,
labels right
now. Oh, yeah. Jug. Right.
So I want to go back to Steve for a little bit while we sip our champagne and talk about your career in radio, because one of the reasons I had you on and one of the reasons I have you back is you are in so many ways my radio mentor.
Thank you.
You run a fabulous talk show, whether it's about gardening or food, and I think you could probably cover any subject that interested you.
Thank you.
So, anyway, you went off the air for a bit, and now you are back on.
Yeah, I was in rehab for about a year. I cleaned up my act, and they put me back on.
No, it was not my doing.
No.
It was none of our doings. It was a business decision.
Yeah.
As we later learned, that the company that owned the station at the time was actively marketing it. And in order to market it, you have to, of course, cut all expenses to the bone.
Oh.
Regardless of whether those...
There's the final piece of the puzzle.
That's right. When we were told, I was called on a Friday back in November of 2012 and told, oh, Steve, I love this speak. Our priorities have changed. What does that mean? It means you're no longer with us, you and John Ash and Gwen. And well, it's been great. Thanks. You've done a wonderful job. No reflection on
gotta
you.
Got to go.
Yeah. So, and I said, well, what do you mean? You mean like next week? And he said, no. Tomorrow, you're not on tomorrow. I said, well, I have guests scheduled. He said, well, that's sorry. Thanks so much. We have your package, your departure package already. Why don't you come in and pick that up and sign
by
up?
By the way, leave your key.
Yeah. So the next call I made was to John, and the next call I made was to Gwen, and the next call I made was to Bruce Adels.
Oh, who was the guest?
Bruce Adels, a marvelous chef.
Great, guest.
A great guest. And I told him, and he was as shocked as all of us were. And again, you know, you look and you're, should I start doing something else with my life? Should I start looking for another job in radio? Or should I just kind of sit and play piano for the next year or two? And that, I said, well, I'm just going to play piano.
Really?
Yeah. So I really got back into playing piano a lot, not really worried about where I was going to go mm-hmm. or what I was going to do. And I just felt that things would work out. If this was the end of Steve Garner's radio career, well, so be it. I've been on the air for 40 plus years, and there's room for other people to take my place. But that's not how I really felt. I said, I've got a lot more to say. So I just kind of bided my time, and then we learned that the station was indeed up for sale right. and had a buyer. And
a great buyer.
The sale went through in April and May of 2013, and we got a call shortly after the ink was dried asking if we'd like to come back. And we said, yes, we would.
Great.
And we relaunched the show at the Gravenstein Apple Fair.
Right, that's
right. August of 2013.
That's right, and that was
we always feel that's
moment.
Our spiritual home away from home. Uh-huh. If I've seen Apple Fair.
Yeah. Every time I've been there, there you've been. Well, that's great. That's a great story, because so many stories about radio are sad. Radio breaks your heart, you know. Over and I, as a listener, radio. I mean, I was the kid under the covers with a transistor radio from the time you know they had them,
mm-hmm.
and you know the changes that you be. It's such an intimate medium.
It is that. And I got hooked from an early age. I got mm-hmm. my transistor, my Bulova transistor radio when I was mm-hmm. 9 years old. It had the beautiful gold brocade over the speaker.
Uh-huh.
And that smell of fake leather and the little gold dial that you would
turn. Yeah, the little dial you turn.
And so I would go to sleep, and of course I'd have my radio underneath the covers and turn that on, and I would listen to these exotic radio stations. This is in the late 1950s at this time. And I'll tell you what hit it for me was I picked up a station, WLAC, in Memphis, Tennessee. And this was the rhythm and blues station of the South. Guys like John R., these great disc jockeys that had these magnificent deliveries.
John R., way down south in Dixie, playing the rhythm and blues for you.
And I, as a nine-year-old kid, I thought, oh, my God, if I could sit there and play records like this guy does, I would never need to eat again. I would just play records for the rest of my life. So I would fall asleep every night listening to John R. My mom would come in and turn off the radio. And from the time I was 9 years old, I was hooked on rhythm and blues and a type of jazz that you didn't really get to hear much on the dial. Very unusual to have any black-owned radio stations back in the 50s that had that type of signal. 50,000-watt clear channel.
Wow.
And up and down the eastern seaboard throughout the South that we could listen to WLAC in Tennessee.
Interesting. What a great, what a fabulous influence.
And also, I'll tell you one more thing. I also bought chickens on that show. My brother and I, you could buy live chickens at that time over the radio.
Over the radio?
You'd buy 100 pullets, and they would ship them to you live.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, this is before your, well, it's not, we're the same age, but this is the South now. And my brother and I saved our allowance, and we ordered 100 chickens that were delivered to our house in Louisville. And I think I got a whipping for that. And I don't remember what happened. This is my older brother. That
you don't remember what happened to the chickens?
No, but I think I'm sure they went to a good home.
I wanted,
but you could order live chickens on the air.
I won a chicken at the fair once.
You did?
I won a little chicken 1 year, and I won a little duck 1 year, but so as far as it went.
So, again, playing records on the air, selling live chickens, how much better life could you
have?
Life
doesn't get better than that. We had very different radio experiences that sort of led us to that same passion. But I had the Bay Area, so I had KDIA.
A great station.
Great station. I mean, I listened under the covers. I listened to Sly Stone when he was a DJ. And, you know, Tom Donahue, I still have the great Tom Donahue. I still have the Elvis Presley Blue Hawaii album I won from Tom Donahue at a dance contest at Vallejo High or in Vallejo.
Wow.
And I always thought I never wanted to leave the Bay Area because I loved Bay Area radio so much. And I think one of the things, when my relationship to it is different than yours, very much because of gender. I never saw myself on the radio. I just wanted to listen to the radio. I never thought it possible. And the way that Mouthful came about was I got a phone call from the new program director. It was about a year into the station. Got a phone call from Robin Pressman. She wanted me to do a radio show. She wanted to meet with me. I came down. And she said, I want you to do a show. I want your show to be like your book, A Cook's Tour of Sonoma. It'll be weekly, and I want you to find a producer. We're starting next Thursday. And that was the day that you came, you know, and that next Thursday was November 2nd, 1995. And for a long time, I didn't want to know how it worked. And at that point, we were in this little tiny construction trailer. You could barely see the equipment, and there wasn't that much equipment to see, but it didn't look like, say, you would think a radio station looked. But they started to build out more of where we are now, and there were jackhammers. And so we had to close up the construction trailer if we were going to broadcast because of the sound of the jackhammers. But there were five. If I had more than one guest, and then we had Robin, and we also had the engineer in there. And so if I had more than one guest, there wasn't enough oxygen for all of us. So that's how I first played music, was to put a song on so that we could open the doors and, you know, refill our oxygen supply. And I think right now I am going to be able to play that first song that I played very close, or at least very close. If it's not, it's not quite the first song, but let's play cut number two, Mary. And when we come back, I'll tell you the magical thing that happened when I played this track, and it's It's what got me hooked on being the one who played things rather than being the one who listened to things. It is, of course, Tom Waits.
Red shoes by the newsstand. The rain splashed a nickel and spilled like Chablis all along the midway. There's a little blue jay, a red dress on a sad night. One stroll in a root beer, a compact with a cracked mirror. The bottle of evening in Paris perfume was a sad tune. Folded away by the magazines, take care of business, it seems. Bring a raincoat, bring a suitcase, bring your dark eyes, and wear those red shoes. There's a doc who let the bus stop, breath arranged in a sad bouquet. Little Caesar got caught, he's going on down a second. He was cooled, changing stations on the chamber to steal a diamond ring from a judo for his baby. Loved the way she looked in those red shoes. She waited by the drugstore. Caesar never been this late before. Dogs bit the moon, rattled the chains. The cold jingle of taps in a puddle was a burglar alarm snitching on Caesar. And the rain washed memories from the sidewalks. The hound splashed the nickel full of soldiers. Santa Claus is drunk in the ski room. It's Christmas Eve in a sad cafe. Moon gets its way. There's a little blue jay by the newsstand. Red shoes, wearing red shoes. So mad, mad at night by the drugstore. Mad, mad at night by the drugstore. Mad, mad at night by the drugstore. Going out at night. Going out at night. Going out at night. Wear your red shoes.
It is Mouthful here on KRCB, the wine country's most delicious hour. That's the second portion, the phrase, the wine country's most delicious hour. That probably came along about the fourth or fifth week. Mouthful. In fact, I walked in. I don't think you were quite there yet, but I walked in to do the first show, and Robin turned to me and she says, "You have to have a name for your show. Have to have a name." And I said, "How about Mouthful?"
Perfect.
And she said, and like we went on the air like 2 minutes later, and I think she was calling it Mouthful with Michelle Anna Jordan, and I didn't like that. And so it just didn't sound right. And within 3 or 4 weeks, I was like, no, the wine country's most delicious hour. I like that.
You like flying by the seat of your skirt, don't you?
It's why I'm a writer, yeah. You know? I wouldn't get out of bed if I didn't have a deadline. You know, because what's the point? I'm just hardwired that way. I remember once, here I'll tell a little, we're telling stories tonight. I remember once, I used homeopathy as my form of medicine for a really long time. And I think my first or my second book was due. And I got really sick. I got this flu. It was my first book, Cook's Tour of Sonoma. That's when I met you, when you had me on. And I got really sick. And I went to this homeopath who never should have been a caregiver of any kind. And God bless her. I hope she's not anymore. And I said, "You have to help me get over this flu. My book is due in 7 days. You know, I have to get well." And she said, how did you find yourself so behind? It's like, I'm not behind. I have 7 days. I'm a writer. But she was very finger wagging. And pair that with, I became friends with one of my favorite writers in the world, Graham Marcus. A great critic, music critic, cultural critic, I mean, brilliant. And by the way, he has a new book out, which I stumbled across at New York University bookstore a couple weeks ago, called The History of Rock and Roll in 10 Songs, and it is brilliant. So I was inviting Greer and his wife Jenny over for dinner, for a dinner party, and he said, we'd love to come, but I have a story due for the New York Times at 8 that morning, so I'll be writing it during dinner time. It's like, what? There's nothing, I'm normal? If my favorite writer in the country writes on top of his deadline, there's nothing wrong with me. Hmm. And that's what it is. I just, you know.
Different than winemaking.
Probably not.
No?
I don't think it is. Man, that when Harvest speaks,
it's crazy time.
Harvest doesn't, you don't say, oh, you know, I'd really like to harvest those grapes in 3 days. You know, harvest tells you when. That's so it's right. A little different, but it has the same, when the urgency comes, it has the same urgency. And that's the thing I like about live radio. Hey, you're on the air. Nothing else is happening. You're on the air. You know, if you do live to tape or if you do the things like NPR, you know, and they get like, I don't know, a 4 or 5 digit budget and they can do a 3-hour interview and then craft it down into 45 minutes and make it sound flawless. That's different. You know, I like the immediacy.
Me too.
Yeah. 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 And you're great at it. What's excited you lately?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I should say, in the world of food, has anything excited you lately?
Okay. Now let me think. Oh, you put me on the spot here. I have to be immediately. Okay. Immediately, let's see. You mean a couple of restaurants that I've enjoyed my meals locally?
It can be restaurants. It can be an ingredient that is either newly available or available because of the seasons. It can be a cooking technique you hadn't thought about before, and you do. Uh-huh. It can be a piece of equipment.
Well, interesting you should say that, because for my birthday this year, I have jumped into the world of sous vide.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
I've had the Thomas Keller book on my shelf since it was out, and I think I've opened it once, and it scared the heck out of me. So I said, for my birthday, a gentleman named John Ash gave me a sous vide cooker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He said, okay.
Would you describe what a sous vide cooker is?
It looks like a piece of apparatus that keeps water at a specific temperature for as long as you want.
Like 141 and a half degrees.
For a month or two, if you'd like. And based on that, you can cook any type of food in a sealed container, which develops a voluptuous, unique, unattainable texture in any other form of cooking. Mm-hmm. And then you can do with it as you would please. You can grill it. You can quickly saute it. You can throw it on a grill. Whatever you'd like to do to add a little extra caramelization to it. So that's what I've been experimenting with. And I've done some salmon dishes that have been pretty spectacular. So that's been... I've gotten over that fear because it's a chef-y technique, you know.
It is. But it's a pretty... there's no special talent, just special equipment.
That's correct. Which fits my cooking style. You nailed it. How subtle Michelle is.
No, I think...
It's called a left-handed compliment.
No, I think you are a very talented cook.
I'm not insulted at all. But
okay, you are a great cook. I mean, all I have to do is have you describe how you make your chili, and there would be no question.
But it is. It was. I have to say, it was a technique that kind of frightened me. I'm like, it's Thomas Keller, and oh my gosh, and I'm saying, all it is putting an ingredient in and dialing in the temperature it's supposed to be, and walking away and going to play piano for a while, or taking a bike ride and coming back, and it's perfectly cooked. Yeah. So
Why are you intimidated by Thomas Keller?
I don't know. But his book, you know, they weigh 13 pounds and they cost $80. But I did use it as my primer, just the techniques of what to do. And he's a very good teacher. He truly is. The recipes, I don't go there, but the techniques and what to look for. So that was exciting. That's been the new thing in my birthday in July, the latest piece of equipment. And what else have I got? Oh, I got a terrible gift that I threw away. Someone gave me a knife from a famous chef. who will go unnamed, and he spent some good money on it for my birthday, and it is the worst piece of junk I have ever seen. I've had this person on my show before, and I felt like I should write him or email him.
Let him know.
Do you know how bad this knife is that I wrapped it in newspaper in the Press Democrat, and I threw it away. I threw it in the recycling bin.
Wow, I've never thrown away.
I've never thrown away a knife. That's how angry I was about this knife.
What was wrong with the knife?
It wouldn't cut for diddle.
It was dull.
It wouldn't cut anything. It's just terrible. It was one of these knives that had holes in them.
Yeah.
You know the type I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That are supposed to, I don't know, reduce the resistance or some physics thing involved, but it just wouldn't cut anything. So that was one present that I didn't care for.
I have to tell you a discovery I made, and I'm really surprised. I was on another show at KSRO, recording one. I thought, I'm right here by Hardesty's. I don't get a chance. I got to go check out Hardesty's. Because, you know, Hardesty's is a nice cookware store. And, like to stay up on things. Last time I was at Hardesty's, I bought a toaster oven. I fell in love with my toaster oven. You sous vide me toaster oven.
Well, don't you own a toaster oven?
No.
What? Who doesn't own a toaster oven?
Me?
Didn't you go to college? Didn't you cook everything in a toaster oven?
I had two kids before
Mary,
I started.
What about your producer? Did you own a toaster oven? Maybe not. What about you,
yes,
Zena?
Yes, I do. Oh,
okay.
I do.
No, I didn't have. I don't have
so
a microwave.
It's two and two.
Well, I've never even had a microwave.
Okay.
But I started noticing how long it took to preheat my main oven, and that started making me cranky. I thought, there's something wrong with this. That's a lot of energy that I could save. And so they had a sale on Cuisinart toaster ovens, and I bought one. And I made the most beautiful meatloaf the other day in a toaster oven. I have roasted, don't think I roasted a chicken, but I think I roasted 3 chicken leg thighs. I mean, I have made so many things in this toaster oven. It's fabulous. But I went in there, and there is this new thing made out of silicone. New things. They are covers for containers. So instead of getting out saran wrap, you get this cover that's shaped like a red poppy or a snowflake or a water lily. And first of all, they fit on containers, and then you pick up the hot container. You're nodding. You've seen them?
Mm-hmm.
They're amazing, aren't they? Aren't they fabulous?
Well, I'm glad, because I didn't want to spend my money until I found out what
they
were.
No, they're
really
fabulous.
Good.
They're fabulous. I'm just like all over them. Totally all over them. Haven't quite trusted. I mean, I strained my stock into this certain kind of stainless steel bowl, and I've put the poppy-shaped lid on top and picked it up, but I haven't. Supposedly you can pick it up and carry it, but I haven't trusted it. I keep a hot pad in my hand and hold the bottom. But you know, saran wrap or any kind of plastic wrap, it always comes off. It's really annoying. And so this is, I think, a quite brilliant alternative. And they also have some, and it's Harvest. And if you don't have flies, I don't even want to know you, you know, because you're living in some kind of controlled environment that scares me.
We have lots of flies.
Oh, the flies right now are so bad. And there's nothing like, okay, you finally, it's the end of the day. You're going to have a glass of wine. You pour yourself this nice glass of local wine. The phone rings, or you realize, you know, oh, I forgot to let the cat in or something, and you go in the other room, and you come back, and there's a fly on its back in, you know, your nice glass of wine. Well, they have little ones. They're about 4 inches across. They don't have the heft, you know, they can't pick up a small, say, saucepan of hot sauce, but they will cover anything, but they're designed to put on top of your glass so that insects don't get in there. And they're pretty. And they're pretty, and they don't take up much space, and they don't tear.
I first was first exposed to that at the Kenwood restaurant.
Oh.
Because there were fruit flies dive bombing into all the wine outside in their back patio, and someone brought this lovely little screen thing that fit right over the wine glass.
It
was perfect.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I bought 4 of the little ones, and then I bought 2 of the bigger ones, and they were out of some of them because they've been really popular. But I think they're hot items. The sous vide I haven't done anything with, you know. Yeah.
Well, I'll report back as I venture deeper into the world of sous vide.
Another thing I want to, actually, you brought some, I want to bring Zena into the conversation. Don't want to ignore you, Zena.
You're not ignoring me.
Good. But you just brought something else out. What is this?
This is a Pinot Noir Russian River Valley. It's from the Kent Ritchie Vineyard, and it's called Cinder Cone. It's volcanic cinder cone.
Oh, wow.
The vineyard is, yeah.
Wow.
30-plus-year-old vines on East Side Road. Beautiful. Just a beautiful wine, and I brought this because it's just drinking so well right now. And
oh,
I thought
cool.
It'd be a nice Thanksgiving wine.
Excellent. And I have to, Zena, I have to talk about how we met.
Yeah, we met. I took your class.
You took a class. Do you remember the class?
Yeah, it was from your first book.
Oh, it was, okay, so it was A Cook's Tour of Sonoma.
Yeah, at the JC.
Yeah, and I remember just talking, and all of a sudden, I was talking in the class, and a student raised your hand, and you said that you were starting a vineyard, or you were starting a winery.
Right.
And then
right.
It was Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
When was, oh God, when was that?
We started in 99, so this is our
This is probably 90s, okay, it was probably about 96 or 97.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah. So anyway, Nick and I have been at it for 15 years this year, and Pinots and Zins, and uh-huh. We've grown to about 3,500 cases now.
Uh-huh. And your Pinot, I think of you as best known for your Pinots, because mm-hmm. you do a number of Vineyard Select.
Right, right.
And you have a tasting room. You should describe where that is.
Oh, my goodness. Our tasting room is on River Road, 5700 River Road, right in the heart of the Russian River Valley.
Great view.
Great view. We've got an awesome deck, beautiful views, great staff. It's a friendly place. People feel very comfortable.
You can take your puppies there.
Yeah,
isn't that right, Joey?
We're dog friendly. Yes, we are. Yeah, so it's just a beautiful spot. We're open Thursday through Monday, 10:30 to 4:30.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
So we're going to try this Pinot.
Let's
You've got some
Pinot.
Beautiful Riedel glasses.
Mm-hmm. I love this wine. We just released it. It's a 2011.
Thank you. Doesn't that just explode out of the glass?
Isn't that lovely? Grapefruit. Hmm?
It's really pretty. I want to dress that color.
What'd you call it? Garnet?
Yeah. Garnet. I think it's garnet. It's lovely.
That's beautiful.
Tell us again where the vineyard is. This is volcanic?
Volcanic. It's called Cinder Cone. It's a volcanic vineyard. Underneath the topsoil is volcanic ash. And it's about 30-plus years old. Mm-hmm. Kent Ritchie is the grower, the farmer. Mm-hmm. And this is our second time making this wine. 2010 was the first, so this mm-hmm. is our second vintage of this wine.
Because I know most of your Pinots pretty well, but I'm not familiar with this vineyard.
Yeah, this is
yeah,
a new one.
I hadn't had this, one either.
Yeah.
It's really lovely. And, you know, I don't know, I'm so suggestible, but I think you can taste the volcanic element.
It's got some minerality, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Some minerality and something... You know, it just makes me... It's partly a visual thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the volcanic, and you know, what an incredible year to be releasing a volcanic wine. Volcanic activity around planet
mm-hmm.
is, I think it's more active than it's been in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You
That's
know,
true.
Thinking about my friends in Pahoa,
uh-huh.
you know, I don't know if you've been following what's going on the big island of Hawaii, Steve. But
I have.
Yeah, it's come into the town of Pahoa.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, hurricanes, volcanoes,
mm-hmm. sleeper waves,
mm-hmm.
you know, all of it. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So we tried to match, actually the color of the label is very similar to the color of the soil underneath the top soil.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Cream. Interesting.
So, yeah, it's kind of a creamy, browny, ash-colored.
You know, actually, I was going to tell you about Plain Tom Waits on Mouthful. In those first few weeks, and we came back and we just started talking. But what was really interesting, I played a Tom Waits song so that we could get oxygen into the studio, and I just wanted something. And I think it was the one that he does about eggs and bacon. That was the song I played. And the phone rang, and this woman said, "Who is this?" I think, if I remember correctly, it seems like she was calling from Petaluma, though. We don't have a signal that really goes that far into Petaluma. Maybe it was more Pengrove. She said, "Who is this?" And she lived locally, but she didn't know Tom Waits. And she was so excited to discover this music. And you could tell this woman was going to get in her car and go to a record store. And that was just magic to me. That was just totally magic and wonderful. And I think we're going to take one more break. Number 15 to Mary. So I have a long history of playing Elvis Costello songs on the show as well. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of his stuff just really fits. And besides, I like him. Did you go to his show?
I did not. Did you?
I got two third row seat tickets for my birthday. And guess who I took?
Your grandson.
I took Lucas. Oh. I took Lucas. I thought, you know, I could take somebody who loved him, or I could take somebody who's going to love him. And I took somebody who's going to love him.
Awesome.
And who now does.
He lies the powder and perfume. The dirty clothes are scattered round the room. And it's so like candy. He lies the lipstick and the face. The colored tablets keep it all.
Taste, and it's so like
like candy. Elvis Costello, it's a great song. It's one of the great ballads. He actually wrote that with Paul McCartney. And I think you can sort of hear that. You can hear the good side. I mean, Paul McCartney, I'm not a major fan. You know, like, I'm not this, like, oh, gaga over the Beatles.
I am.
Are you? Yeah, most people are. Most people are, and I understand.
But not after the Beatles.
Yeah. Wait, but you can. I think you can sort of hear his influence in that song.
Yeah.
I don't have the musical terms. Anyway, one of the favorites here on A Mouthful, and we're just still drinking this beautiful Pinot Noir. What do you think about food and wine pairings? Either one of you.
Well, I was kind of looking forward to those oysters.
Yeah.
Darn.
Well, I think one of the food pairings that everyone anywhere that I would ever want to speak to knows that sparkling wine, a crisp, bright, still, minerally wine is the best thing to have with a rye oyster.
Absolutely.
And that, why would you ever cook an oyster? We'll do it. I promise. We will make it happen. I will make it happen. But beyond that, do you think there's any... I mean, I saw something on Iron Horse website about Osobuco and Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Cabernet and Halibut are a great pairing. But
and wild mushrooms in Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
Porcinis are out.
That's right. They're starting to get porcini. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. Duck, for me, always jumps out when I drink any Pinot Noir.
Duck.
I had some marvelous deep-fried duck wings yesterday.
Really?
For lunch, and they were sensational.
Where?
Over at the Kenwood, the new Kenwood.
Oh, so you've been going there. I haven't been out there a couple times.
Yeah, that's a keeper dish, deep-fried duck wings. I recommend that heartily.
How were they seasoned?
They had a somewhat of an Asian ginger lemongrass sauce that was just terrific with a little bit of either, some type of hot pepper diced very fine in the sauce. Perfectly cooked and a great, great, great appetizer.
So do you go out more or cook more?
I never go out. I pretend.
I've been really, really into home cooking lately. I don't go out. I went out. I'll make a confession. I got into baseball this year.
Giants.
Gone over to the sports dark side.
Well, here's the deal. I have a rule in my life. I do not ever turn down an invitation from Coppola. If I get an invitation from somebody who is Francis Coppola's publicist or the winery's PR, whatever, I don't turn down. Because one of the things is there's this sense of you never know what might happen. It's whatever happens at it when you respond to a Coppola invitation, it's not going
to
be what you expect.
Yeah.
Not only did I get to go to a free baseball game, I got this email that said, "We are writing to you to invite you to join us for Coppola Day. We'll be at the Virgin Loft at AT&T Park." And I don't know, Virgin Loft, whatever. And so I sent it to a friend of mine who's like totally into baseball. And I said, "What do you think? Do I need to go to this?" And he's there. Oh, my God. It's the best place in the ballpark.
It's where God sits to watch the game.
Yes. And I lost my baseball virginity in the Virgin Loft.
Oh, my God.
That was high-fived several times. So I had a book due 3 days later.
Yeah.
And I didn't have one day of leeway. But I thought, you know what? It's my rule. I don't turn down Coppola invitations. So I went. I took the ferry, and then I walked to McCovey Park, and that's where you walk up. And you walk in, like, three steps, and some really nice guy says, you know, scans you with his, like, looking for medals, is going up. And then you have your own little place with your own bathroom and really good food and somebody pouring you wine every time you turn around. And, like, you can sit outside or you can sit inside, and it's fabulous. So the Giants fell apart in the ninth inning. That made me sad. But it made me pay a little more attention. So I paid attention this time and, you know, just like practically jumped up and down on my couch on the Sunday night game and then wanted to slash my wrists on the Tuesday night game or whatever night it was. Yeah, whatever. It's like, what? Is this the same team? Are you serious? And then I was somewhere on Wednesday night. Oh, I know. Okay. I had some obligations and I got home and it was 7:30 and at the end of the seventh inning, it was still Giants up. And I thought, you know, I don't want to do this alone. I want to be with people. So I went down to K&L Bistro. Mm-hmm. It was great. I talked to strangers. I drank too much. It was fabulous. But I don't, other than that stuff like that, I don't go out much. I just cook.
You know? I tell people now that our family, our original family name was Steve Bumgarner.
Yeah.
We dropped the bum. But.
Yes, yes. And well, you should. And yeah, that was a real revelation for me. How I actually had to write to a friend, and I said, you know, am I missing something, or was this as beautiful as I thought it was? Because I thought his pitching was, like, took my breath away. It was like a choreographed ballet or something. It was gorgeous. Really, really gorgeous.
I agree. It's like a ballet.
Exactly. It was like a ballet. So how did we get there? Anyway.
from duck and peanut, I don't know,
to
fried
baseball.
Duck wings? Yeah. To baseball, somehow.
Fried duck wings to baseball. That's the thing about mouthful. You can go anywhere. So do you have advice for me?
Boy, you have weathered the storm, Michelle. I mean, look at the last 18 years in broadcasting. There's hardly anybody standing left. Everything has been consolidated, just programmed by people thousands of miles away. We're the last of the bastion here.
There's a big difference
of being able to
between
get
the
on
two
the radio
of us.
And just talk.
Yeah, yeah. There's a difference between the two of us. You get paid.
That's true. Not a lot, but I do.
You get paid a little bit. I don't get paid at all. No. And sometimes I wonder, you know, am I crazy? Am I going to be like, oh, there's this woman. She lives under the bridge. You know, she'll talk to you. If you take her some peanuts, she really loves bacon. If you want to hear her best stories, take
but
her some
Michelle,
on the Hef Show.
It doesn't matter. Even if you are huge in whatever field of work, there's a little voice in the back of your mind saying, it could all go south tomorrow. And I'll give you an example, and I know he won't mind me telling this story. It's John Ash. Mm-hmm. He's one of the most successful chefs
Absolutely.
In the country. Okay. I've known John since 1987. We've done the show almost 28 years together. And we talk openly about where our lives are going and where it might end up. And I said, do you have any fear at all? But you're so successful. And he said, you know what I think is going to happen someday? I'm going to wake up. No one's going to want any of my books. No one's going to want to hire me. And I'm going to end up doing the overnight shift at Denny's. I'm going to be cooking the breakfast at Denny's.
That's a much more hopeful image than me under the bridge.
That's true. He'll be getting paid.
That's right. He'll be getting minimum wage. You know, I'll be collecting county assistance, and it won't be enough. No, it's an interesting time for what is valued and what isn't valued. That will never happen to John.
No, I don't think
so. It will never happen to John. And at
Might
some
happen
point,
to
I
you,
hope,
though.
Thank you. I'm hoping at some point John will weigh in and say, that will never happen to Michelle.
No, so, you have a very unique, there's no other show like yours that I've ever heard that is...
In a good way?
Yeah, no, I mean a good way, because it's a food show, but yet it goes many other places. And mine, for better or worse, is focused just completely on food, where you just have such a far-ranging palette of interest.
You know, the model for my show, in the back of my mind, the model of the show... If I had a budget, I would be able to, you know, expand this concept and make it more tangible. But it's like what it's like to have really great guests around the dinner table, where the conversation just like goes from this to that to this to that. And that's what I wanted to create.
Well, then the beauty of what public radio offers is you don't have to be interrupted.
Right.
For better or worse, yes, I'm getting paid, and that's because people deem the show worthy of buying time on.
Right.
But within that is we're in a great conversation, and all of a sudden, it's time to take a break. And then you have to halt that momentum, and
sure.
Three or four minutes later, you have to try to regain that momentum.
Yeah.
And oftentimes, it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. So there's the downside to commercial broadcasting.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've never felt like I could fit into commercial broadcasting. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, yeah, for all the reasons that all the descriptions that you offer, I just feel like it wouldn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But you probably make it work better than anyone I've ever done. You really are, not to get all sentimental and, you know, gooey and stuff. You are my radio mentor. You do a fabulous job. and you do it. And well, one of the things you told me is to always be myself. You always seem like yourself. Your transitions are smooth, and you never humiliate your guests.
But I sometimes
you want to. Sometimes I can tell when you want to. I can absolutely tell when you want to, but you never do it. You're always a gentleman.
Well, that my mama did teach me.
Well, you're from
Kentucky.
Of course you're a gentleman.
Honestly, and she was. I have to credit my mother for those type of manners, of having manners.
You have fabulous manners.
And,
you know,
you can let the listener fill in those blanks.
Yes.
Why doesn't Steve tell this person to take a flying leap?
Yes.
No. You tell him. Steve is going to, because it's much better that way, because then they get the charge.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
instead of me taking I give
this
it
makes
to them.
Me wish we had another hour because I want to ask you a sucker. You know, I can count on one hand, I think, the guests I've hated. And I don't know if it's bled through. I don't know. But
I have to say, I've done the show since 1987, so I don't know how many shows that is. But out of that, I have very fortunate. There's only been a handful of people.
Yeah. Well, it's like five people for me.
Yeah.
Maybe four.
Yeah.
Five.
Yeah.
Just thought of them.
Yeah. It's not so much that the person, I don't mind if the person is a jerk to me. I really don't. Mm-hmm. But they cannot insult my listener.
Insult your listeners. Yes,
because that's
exactly.
Like talking dirty about my kid or, you know, going
yeah.
upside.
Don't
I can do
insult
that. Don't insult
the
my listeners. And this guest did, and he was never invited back.
I think I know who you're talking about.
Well, let's not mention that person.
I won't mention his name.
But after we had a guest, and a woman called and asked a question, mm-hmm. and after we hung up, we took a break, he said, "Don't have those two people on anymore. I don't want to talk to people like that." I said, "Well, thank you. Okay, good." And at that point, I said, "Okay, he's not my type of guy."
Yeah. And on that note, another hour has gone by.
Oh, come on. Is it already?
Hey, we're overtime.
Zena brought more wine.
She brought more wine, and we're not finishing. So, you know, Woodenhead, is it woodenheadwines.com?
Woodenheadwine.com.
Woodenheadwine.com. It is one of the best, the finest boutique wineries in Sonoma County. Extraordinary. If you've never tasted French Colombard, you will not find French Colombard expressed more beautifully than in their still and their sparkling. And thank you so much. I love your wines.
You.
It's
thanks,
great
Michelle.
To see you.
Thanks,
and Steve, you know, 9 to 11 is Garden Talk.
Yes.
11 to, and I hear you just had Frederick on.
Yeah, yes,
Frederick, who used to produce Mouthful.
And you heard me say why I asked her to come on the show? Because I love saying her name.
Oh, Frederick.
Frederick
Lavoie-Pierre.
Oh,
and do you know what Lavoie-Pierre means?
No.
Rocky Road.
Does it really? Do you
Rocky
remember
Road.
Her mom?
Michelle Donnet,
yeah.
Who is the most beautiful
anyway,
torch singer.
We could talk about Frederick's mom for an hour.
She sang torch songs
yes.
At
Lou Preston's.
For the Grande Ole at Lou Preston's. And on that note, we are so out of time. Meet me back here for another episode of Mouthful, entering its 20th year here on KRCB. Thank you very much.
Your biggest fan.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Let it be.
got some beans and good cornbread. Listen to what the preacher said.